Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
We are all entitled to sexual health, just as much as physical and mental health.
We want to make it easier for folks to find resources. However they engage with us, there's no wrong door.
So it's important that people are able to get access to care that is affirming.
Talking about what their sex life is, about their concerns, and to make sure they're healthy.
Do it for them. Do it for you, Montgomery County.
Your sexual health matters. Visit doitforumc.org.
Hey everyone, Scott Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Hello and welcome to the 5 Yard Dynasty podcast with me, Rich Cooling. Another fantastic show lined up for you today. We're going to continue on the rookie preview theme. So today we're approaching the running back position. And I am joined by one part of the Fantasy Wildcard podcast, also does write some content for the guys over at the Astronauts. So Matt, how you doing, Matt?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm doing good. Thanks, Rich. I appreciate you having me on.
No, fantastic to have you on. Very excited. Obviously, everybody knows you from your threads you've been posting out on Twitter. So already sure a lot of the guys know your thoughts on a few of these backs, but looking forward to hopefully diving into them in a bit more detail.
Absolutely.
So before we kind of, I guess, dive into talking through each of the backs, where do you kind of see this kind of class, I guess, lined up as a, you know, compared to obviously last year was pretty incredible in terms of the volume of fantasy relevant running backs. But do you think this could rival that class or not?
Personally, no, I don't believe so. Obviously, we're going to go through a few of these guys, but if we're talking in comparison to last year's class, I'd only really put Najee Harris up there with the likes of the top end of that 2020 class, obviously Jonathan Taylor, DeAndre Swift, etc. I think there's only really him that I'd put right up along those guys. And then beyond that, I'm talking more around that RB5, 6 range if you're comparing him to last year's class.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I put it out on Twitter earlier in the week, asking about how many backs do you think from this class are actually going to be kind of feature backs. And to be honest, I'd be shocked if it was more than two. I just don't think that there's a lot of options out there that are going to come in and command, you know, 200-300 touches at the next level. I think it is an incredible class in a few other positions, but I think this running back class is actually pretty weak. Which is quite interesting because I also think the free agency class is quite weak at running back. There's a lot of names out there, but I don't think there's actually, from a fantasy perspective, many players that are going to go out and be a stud elsewhere as such.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. If you're talking about just looking at the size of these backs, as you say, there's only really a couple that stand out as that prototypical size for a workhorse running back. A lot of them are more your smaller backs that are going to be used in a third down situation and more in the passing game. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Obviously, landing spots play a big part in it as well. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see where some of these guys land and how it plays out for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, on that, I guess, how much do you kind of weigh when you're looking your sort of pre-draft rankings, post-draft rankings, how much do you count landing spot in terms of that sort of overall picture?
I think when it comes to the running back position, I probably value it a little bit more than say, a wide receiver. I think when you're talking more wide receiver, I think the talent tends to show through a lot more. But running backs, yeah, I definitely value it quite a bit. But I know there's been times where I've looked back and think, why are you fading a player, or why are you trying to grab a player just because of landing spot? So, yeah, it plays a part. I try not to play too big a part. I try to have somebody in mind that I know from a talent level what I think they are. And then, obviously, it helps if you're in a spot where you know a guy's gonna see a good amount of volume. Then, yeah, I think you've got to move up. And it happened last year, obviously, with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and I think some people feel a bit burnt by that. Obviously, they played to the situation landing with the Chiefs, and he's obviously not performed up to the out of control height, really, I think, for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So, yeah, it's something to bear in mind, I think.
Yeah, I think. Personally, I try not to take it into account. I think I try to kind of rule it out. I think last year, for me, with the Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I think for me, it was more the draft capital than the landing spot. Mm-hmm. You know, if one of these backs, you know, we'll talk about it a bit more, but if someone like Kenny Gainwell suddenly went at the back end of the first round, to me, that is a significant kind of investment from the team, that extra fifth year option, that kind of thing. That is what would skyrocket somebody in the up my board rather than perhaps the specifics of landing spot as such. But what we're going to do is we're going to work through, I guess, kind of how I've got my ranks and my first couple of tiers, and we'll talk through each back as we go. So the first back we're going to talk about is the guy that you've kind of already hinted as the one guy that you feel is a potential stud out of this class, and that's Najee Harris. So talk to me. What do you think about Najee Harris? What type of back is he?
Yeah, for me, he's definitely my RB1, and he's on a tier on his own, as I alluded to a bit earlier. I think he's just got it all. He's as a former 5-star recruit coming out of high school, he was the number one ranked RB in that 2017 recruitment class, and that included names like Jonathan Taylor, DeAndre Swift, Cam Akers, and also some fellow 2021 incoming running backs like Travis Etienne and Chuba Hubbard and Trey Sermon as well, I believe. So he's obviously been highly regarded right from the get-go. And I think it's just the fact he's a big-bodied back. I think he's going to get a lot of comparison to somebody like Derrick Henry because of his size. He's 6'2", 230 pounds. So I think he's going to draw some comparisons to that. But I believe Harris is a lot more, he's more elusive, he's quicker, he's a lot more lighter on his feet as well than somebody like Derrick Henry, who's more of a bruiser, somebody you want around the goal line. Whereas I think Harris got a little bit more to his game. The passing work as well is improved in his passing work over the years in college with Alabama. Last year, he had 43 receptions, 425 yards, 4 touchdowns. So that's something you always look to see, and you're always happy to see when you're evaluating these prospects. So I just think all the signs are pointing to a really solid workhorse back in Harris. And I believe he is going to be a true three-down running back. It could have declared actually for the 2020 class, but I think he's made a great decision by staying in college. He's avoided that crowded running back room out of the 2020 class that we spoke about a little earlier. So looks to be a great move for him. And yeah, I think he could definitely go in the first round of the NFL draft.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, he's gone from last year, he'd have been potentially the third or fourth back off the board. And this year he's very much in a tier of his own. I guess I've got a couple of concerns with him in that, as much as, yes, he is a big back, I think at times he won with size over agility in terms of at the tackle point. And I think that he's kind of getting into the minutiae here, but I don't think he's great at setting up the tackle. What I mean is that I think he runs straight into tackle rather than trying to set it up. And at times when he does try to use his agility to avoid the tackle, he basically takes to the air. And I think you know, we've all seen these amazing videos of him leaping over people, but I think actually he probably tries to do that a bit too much. And I think that if he could use that agility more at the next level, I think it could really help him, you know, kick on. But to echo everything you said, I think he's the one person that I'd probably hang my hat on and say, yeah, I think he's going to be relevant. I think he's going to be a, you know, an above average back at the next level. I don't think he's going to be probably an RB1 in terms of my dynasty tiers, but also as a performer in the next couple of years. But I think he's got that within his kind of realm of possible outcomes. But I think he's probably going to settle into that solid RB2. I'd probably throw him in somewhere like it's going to upset a few people, someone like a Josh Jacobs, where it's just a bit of a compiler rather than anything too exciting.
Yeah, I think personally, I'd probably have him a touch over Josh Jacobs, just because we mentioned that pass catching is a proven pass catcher, and as I say, he's improved over the years at that part of his game. Another concern I know a lot of people have got as well is his age. Is obviously he's going to be 23 in his rookie season, so for a running back, we start panicking when we get to 26. So we're talking 3 years, but now I've got no concerns, if I'm honest. I think he is completely fine as a running back, and I'm excited to see what he can do it in the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. And then moving on to my RB2, I feel like from everything I've seen over the past couple of weeks, I'm probably in the minority of having him still at my RB2, but it's going to be Travis Etienne. Yeah. Where's he in your kind of rankings?
Yeah, he's right there as well, Rich. I've got him as my RB2. He is in that second tier now. Obviously, I've just mentioned that Harris is on his own in that first tier, but yeah, he's right there in the second tier and as my RB2. Highly efficient college career. He's obviously got a different playing style than what Harris has, but he's such an explosive player. He's got that incredible burst. His straight line speed is unreal, and also his contact balance as well is really tough to bring down. So if you get him in that open space, he's gone and is basically impossible to bring down. You're going to struggle to catch him, especially if it gets to a linebacker. I think they're going to have a real tough time keeping up with somebody like him. So, yeah, again, another really interesting prospect. I think he has the ability to be a three-down running back. So, again, as we just mentioned with the landing spots, that's going to play a big part of it. But he can catch the ball, 48 receptions, 588 yards and two touchdowns last year. So, he's definitely a capable pass catcher. I'm not so sure if I'd say it's one of his best traits. There's obviously been, you've seen the headlines going around about that he gets scared when he sees the ball coming towards him. It frightens him. So obviously that's not something you want to hear from a running back, but it's proven he can do it. And when you look at the stats, it's something that is fine doing. So yeah, definitely a guy I think that can have a three down role.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the knocks I've got on him aren't necessarily kind of fantasy relevant knocks in terms of, I think his pass pro is quite frankly awful.
Yeah.
I think that's somewhat overrated when you get to the next level, because I think if you've got a forward thinking offensive coordinator, he's going to get him out in space on most passing routes rather than sticking him in pass pro.
Exactly.
I am a little bit intrigued. His market share touchdown performance was never great. Now, I appreciate that Clemson offense, you know, was pretty high flying at times. You had Trevor Lawrence, who was pretty useful in the red zone, but his best market share touchdown percentage was only 53%, which, you know, you compare it to someone like Najee Harris, who had a 72% touchdown season. Do you think that could cap his fantasy relevancy if he's not going to be used as that kind of goal line, high kind of red zone back?
Potentially, yeah, I can understand why, but I just said I think it's going to come down to the system he lands in. I mean, if he lands in somewhere like, I know San Francisco, that's obviously a big one that everyone's praying that somebody like Etienne lands in. I think, yeah, when it comes to somewhere like that, I think you can use his best traits, so his speed and get him doing stretch plays, get him to the outside, get him in space, and if he can do something like that, then I think it's completely fine. He's not a guy that you want at the 1 yard line trying to smash through a crowded bunch of players. So yeah, it's gonna depend a lot on landing spot and hopefully in a system that uses them correctly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's probably the reason I've got him a notch below Najee Harris is that I think Najee Harris is going to go in and be, you know, that true essentially backfield to himself, whereas I think Etienne's always going to need somewhat of a compliment. I don't think he's ever going to be able to say, right, he can do absolutely everything for us. I think there's a couple of bits that, you know, that that sort of red zone work, that that pass pro, I think he's going to need a solid 1B to him as such.
Yeah, this is probably going to be one of those players where you're going to get frustrated with a vulture coming in and stealing those touchdowns in fantasy.
Yeah, you can mark it now. Wherever he gets drafted, Jordan Howard's going to go and sign as a free agent. So talking of Jordan Howard, our next back, we're going to go on to another big back. So Javonte Williams. So what do you think of him?
Yeah, my RB3 and again in that second tier. It wasn't really on many people's radar last offseason, but obviously he's boosted his draft stock no end in 2020. He had a great junior season in one of probably the nation's most productive backfield in North Carolina, alongside another prospect I'm sure we'll talk about a little more later on.
It's a nice tease from you there, Matt.
But yeah, he's, as you say, he's just that prototypical NFL running back size. He's 5'10", 220 pounds. Strong physical runner, but he's also elusive and he forces plenty of broken tackles. He averaged 7.3 yards per carry and 19 rushing touchdowns in 2020. So just a brilliant 2020 for him. As I say, it's boosted his draft stock no end. He was second in the NCAA in yards after contact with 4.59 yards. So it just goes to show how tough he is to bring down. And then again, he's capable at pass catching, 25 receptions, 305 yards and two touchdowns. So, yeah, again, another running back that I think can do it all and has definitely got that potential to be a three-down running back. And another positive for him, he's only 21 years old as well, coming into that rookie season. So we know we're going to get plenty of years out of him. So, yeah, really exciting prospect.
Yeah, I think for me, I guess the most exciting thing alongside that size, you know, you said he's very much a big guy, he's prototypical in terms of that size, but his short area quickness with that size is incredible. We talked about Najee Harris not perhaps setting up the kind of tackle point effectively. I think Javonte Williams does that incredibly well. He is so good in the hole. I do think, though, that perhaps that sort of outside zone, you know, it feels like we say this for literally every player. He'd be a great fit in the Shanahan offense. Yeah. But I think if you can get him in that one-cut offense where he's perhaps not having to think and he can use that short area quickness where sees the hole and goes, I think that's where he's going to perhaps be at his best.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think one knock I've got against him, he probably doesn't have that elite top end speed. Obviously, somebody like Etienne that we just spoke about earlier, he's got that in bags. But I don't think Williams has quite got that. I've seen plenty of tape where you see him starting to get caught towards the end of his run. So that would be a little concern. But as I say, he's such a tough runner and he's probably got one of the best stiff arms out of this whole class from what I've seen on the tape. So even if someone is trying to bring him down, he's going to do plenty of Derrick Henrys, I think, and shove him off him.
And I think with the receiving game, I know, yes, he had the you know, as you said, the 25 receptions and he's been utilised in an offence that obviously most of the receiving work went to his counterpart in most of those opportunities. But are you concerned about that at the next level? Do you think he'll, again, be sort of limited to that 1A, 1B type backfield rather than a true kind of all-round offensive weapon as such?
I think it's tough with a guy like Williams because obviously, as you mentioned, he was playing alongside somebody else in North Carolina. So that did eat into it, his pass-catching weight. But it was pretty much a 50-50 split in those receptions. So if we take out the other running back, then we could be talking maybe up to 50 receptions. I mean, I doubt he gets them all. But I think just because he was sharing that backfield, that did kind of eat into his game log and how many receptions he actually had. So I think from what I've seen, he's definitely capable. And I'd like to think that in the right spot, he'd be allowed to show what he can do in the passing game.
Yeah, fair enough. So the next guy is, I can say now, he's my favourite back in this class. I don't necessarily think he's going to be the best, but I can just watch his film all day. Yeah. And that's Kenneth Gainwell. So where are you on Kenny Gainwell?
Yeah, he's my RB5. I actually have one more player above him. I'm sure a lot of people can guess if they know me who it is that I've got above him. But yeah, he's my RB5. But he's still in that second tier. Obviously, he opted out of the 2020 season, but he had a fantastic 2019 season as a redshirt freshman. Just under 1,500 rushing yards and over 600 receiving yards. So again, another back that can do it all. And that was in Memphis, and it was actually keeping out Antonio Gibson out of that backfield. Obviously, we know how great Antonio Gibson's been in the NFL. It was Gainwell that was stopping him getting any snaps in the RB position in Memphis. So I think that just goes to show how good an actual running back Gainwell is. But as you mentioned, he's a fantastic pass-catching running back. He's got great route running and extremely elusive, great burst. He's, as you say, his films are an absolute joy to watch, and I've had a lot of fun watching his film. He just makes plays that you just don't expect from a running back. He makes some brilliant catches. He's definitely one of the best pass catchers, I think, out of this running back class for sure.
I think for me, I think the reason I love him is that he's got that versatility that I don't think many backs in this class have, in that I can very much see Kenneth Gainwell getting 100 snaps as a receiver next year. And I think he's that kind of guy where you can pretty much put him wherever you want on the field and he'll be effective. I think draft capital is going to be absolutely key. Obviously, he sat out the 2020 season. He had, by the sounds of it, a pretty horrific year. He lost several family members to COVID and that kind of thing. And I think if the NFL still believe in the talent and are willing to put, you know, day two draft capital on him, I could very much see him bumping up at least a couple of spots in my rankings. I think if he gets round two draft capital the same as Etienne and Williams, I could possibly see him jumping ahead of those, depending on where he goes, because I just think that his upside is greater because of that flexibility and potential to be used essentially as that true kind of backfield to himself.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree with that. I think if he lands in, as we say, in a good system for him, somebody that's going to maybe put him in the slot a few games, get him in space and just let him use that elusiveness, that explosiveness. And yeah, I think it can be a great running back. And from fantasy, he's one of those backs that you just dream of having, somebody that can be a solid running back, but then contributing through the air as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you kind of taken into account the fact he's not played for a year into your kind of considerations and where you've got him?
Yeah, I think it's made me drop him down a little bit. I think obviously he's had a year away from playing football. We'd like to think that obviously he's been keeping fit and training and what have you. But yeah, it does become a bit of a concern. Obviously, stepping away from the field for a year, it is a worry. But as you say, I think if he does get that solid draft capital, I believe that he can be a round two pick, maybe a late round two. And if he can land somewhere like the Cardinals, Tampa Bay, somewhere like that, where they need a pass-catching running back and a system where they can get him out into space. I'm really excited for Gainwell, if I'm honest. And like you, I think I'd move him up a couple of spots.
Fantastic. I'm not sure Kev's going to be happy if you're putting another running back in Tampa.
Oh, I know, is Ronald Jones, his love for Ronald Jones, it's going to take another knock if that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. He might finally accept that he's not a true stud.
Well, I won't be so sure on that one. I don't think we'll ever end a Ronald Jones, even when he retires.
Very much so. So then my RB5, so again, I'll be honest, this is the guy that I found it hardest to grade, both from a kind of a stats perspective, but also from a film perspective. So that's Jamar Jefferson. So I guess where does he sit for you? What do you make of him?
Yeah, he's my RB6 and he's now in the tier three for me. He's a little bit below the other guys we've just spoke about. It was a three-star prospect when he was recruited, but he had an amazing freshman season, nearly 1,400 rushing yards, but he struggled in 2019. I believe he had a few injuries, so that didn't help him. But then he bounced back last year in his junior season, averaging 143 yards per game. So just goes to show what kind of player he is. He's explosive. He's got great acceleration and he makes big plays. He's a very shifty runner as well. He's more of a slipper running back. He's got quick feet rather than a guy that's going to use his power to beat you. He's more of a uses jump cuts, change of direction to beat the opposing defenders. So somebody that's definitely really interesting. I just have those little concerns about his style of play. And as I say, he's just not quite in that tier above for me.
Yeah, I think if you were just going to sit and look through highlights of any of these backs, I could easily see you putting Jamal Jefferson as your, you know, your RB1 overall, because his highlights are better than anybody else's highlights. Yeah. They are absolutely, truly incredible. But it's that level of consistency that just that's just not there. I don't know whether he can. I feel like I'm saying this for every back, but I don't know if he's going to be a true three down back at the next level. Yeah. Yes, he's had some receiving game usage, but he's never been a big part of his game. You know, he's had his best season was his freshman year, and he only had a 5.8% market share of the receiving work. And I just worry that, you know, he's going to be a 1B complementary back that's never, you know, he's going to be one of these fantasy guys that you always have on your bench and think, oh, he could be fantastic, he could be incredible, but he's never going to truly get that kind of usage and that workload to be a stud, essentially.
Yeah, I agree. In my notes, I've just got down, he's got a lot of good traits without really being elite at any, I don't think. As you say, he shows them big splash plays that are great on film, but then the other 90% of the time, it's nothing really exciting. So, yeah, that is my concern. And as you say, it's just whether he could actually carry that full workhorse role. I'm not so sure myself.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting as well that for a career, he's got the lowest yards per touch of any of these running backs in the top seven. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you look at, probably you could argue he's playing in the kind of lower levels of, I guess, yes, he's a Power Five conference, but it's that, you know, it's not the SEC, is it? Let's be honest.
Yeah.
And I just worry that that's not going to transition as well to the next level.
Yeah, I think it's going to be more of a Twitter darling. I think a lot of people on Twitter are going to be excited about him. And I think he could potentially be one of those backs that as you say, just doesn't really turn into what you hope he could have been.
I could absolutely see him being Tony Pollard at the next level. And that's not comparing them as specifically as players, because I think Tony Pollard's a much better receiver.
Yeah.
But I think that he's the guy that can show a couple of times in the preseason that he's incredible. He'll come in for, you know, a third and 15 and pick up 12 yards and look fantastic doing it, but actually doesn't get the first down. And I think that you can see, as you said, that Twitter darling nature where people are like, oh, but if he got the workload, he'd be fantastic. But I don't know if an NFL team is ever going to give him that full workload as such.
Yeah, that's it. If he has a low draft capital, I could see him going behind a star running back. And as you say, somebody like Pollard, just a great insurance policy rather than actually seeing too much playing time. And as you say, it's going to be really frustrating.
Yeah, and I think that probably shows, let's be honest, the drop-off in terms of this class as overall, in that we're talking about my RB5, your RB6, and we're already saying we don't think he's going to be a fantasy relevant player at the next level. It shows that this class is, not particularly deep.
No.
Well, I think I've kept you from talking about him long enough. So I feel like I've just got it's like one of those little toys that you wind him up and just let him go. So I'm just going to say Michael Carter and over to you, Matt.
Yeah. He's my RB4, so I'm not getting too carried away, but he's in that tier two for me, and he's pretty much neck and neck, I think, with Javonte Williams and Travis Etienne for me. So, yeah, just a really exciting running back. He's probably, for me, the most exciting. I know, as you alluded to, I bang on about him all the time on Twitter, and he's definitely become my crush out of this draft class. This running back class. As we mentioned earlier, as part of that awesome North Carolina backfield, and Carter had 1,500 yards from scrimmage and he averaged 8 yards per carry. So fantastic efficiency when he's got the ball. And I think the thing that stands out for me is his vision. He's got great patience behind the line and he's also a very elusive run as well. So again, like we spoke about a couple of these running backs, he's just one of those guys that if you get him in space, he's going to make players miss time and time again with just his elusiveness, his jump cuts. And I've had a great time watching his film. I keep posting videos of some of his runs on Twitter, as I say, because I'm obsessed with him, basically. And I think he's right up there. We've mentioned some guys that have got great tape. For me, Carter's right up there. And again, another pass catcher. As we mentioned earlier with Williams, Carter had 25 receptions as well. And he turned those into 267 yards and 2 touchdowns, which is just under 11 yards per reception. And also, he played in the Senior Bowl and he had arguably the best game of all the players on the field, I think. He had 8 carries, which he turned into 60 yards and a touchdown. So it's just he's just wowed me, if I'm honest. Rich is somebody that I'm in love with, and we've mentioned it, but if he gets that draft capital and a good landing spot, then you won't be able to hold me back, I'm afraid, am I? he's going to fly up my rankings, and he's going to be right behind Harris, I think, for me.
Yeah, I don't want this to come across as I don't believe in Carter. I like him, but I just think his ceiling's limited. I think that, for me, he gets tackled by the first guy too often. Mm. And I think that if a defense gets any sort of penetration in the run game, he sort of freezes, and not in a good way, you know, like you talk about Le'Veon Bell, where he's patient and he sort of manipulates blockers and defenders to create holes. I think Michael Carter, if there's penetration, he just sort of freezes, and he doesn't seem to know whether he should be trying to run people over or trying to make people miss. And I think that I don't know if that's something that he can correct at the next level. And I think that if he can, then yes, I think he could potentially be, you know, I compared him to Ray Rice. I think he's that sort of shorter but solid build, useful in the receiving game. Could easily come in and be a three down back, yeah. But I just don't know if there's going to be too many negative plays for him to be getting the workload that he need to be kind of fantasy relevant. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think his size is something that's going to get spoken about a lot. Obviously, he's a shorter running back. He's only 5'8" and just under 200 pounds. So that is something that people are going to hold against him. And as I should say, if there's not a hole, he's going to struggle to run people over, and he is going to struggle in that part of his game. But as we keep mentioning with these running backs, if you just land him in that right system, I honestly, I think it's wheels up for somebody like Carter. I know you just made a comp there. I actually put one on Twitter, and I just think he's going to be what everybody thought Clyde Edwards-Helaire was going to be. I think he's going to be that and even better for me personally. And I did catch some heat for that on Twitter, and it wasn't anything against Clyde Edwards-Helaire either. I do think he had a really solid rookie season, but I just think Carter is going to get a lot of comparisons, I think, somebody like Clyde Edwards-Helaire because of the size of both the running backs. But yeah, I'm just super excited for Carter, if I'm honest.
Yeah, no, I can tell. I think, yeah,
maybe it's not like I don't talk about him.
I think maybe I need to reassess my Jamal Jefferson Carter, because I'm sitting here talking about it and thinking maybe I need to bump Carter up. But I'm just concerned that he can only really, you know, he requires a gap to get going. I guess I'd compare it a little bit to a Derrick Henry, which sounds ridiculous as a comparison because you couldn't get two more kind of polar opposite type players. But I think if you think of Derrick Henry, if there's penetration, if he doesn't get going, he sort of doesn't get anywhere. You almost have to get him in the first 2 yards. Mm-hmm. And I think Carter's a little bit like that, in that if he can get 3-4 yards of kind of positive play, then he's away and you know, he's fantastic. Yeah. But I just think that he needs that right system, that right space, in order to get going.
Yeah, I do agree with that. And I think we've mentioned it, but landing spots, I think, is going to be key for somebody like Carter. But again, we mentioned the Cardinals. I think that would be a great landing spot for him. And obviously, the San Francisco one that everybody talks about, I think it worked well in a system like that. But yeah, you're not gonna knock my hopes and my confidence in him, Rich. I'm still a big fan.
I have to say, I love that we started the podcast by saying, yeah, neither of us take into account landing spot. We try not to consider it at all and then we've literally every running back we've gone so landing spot dependent.
Yeah, I think it is just because, like we've mentioned though, because of the class and what it is, I do think it is going to play a bigger part than, obviously, we've mentioned the 2020 class with those kind of running backs. I think they were a lot less dependent on landing spot, whereas when we're talking about these slightly smaller, more twitchy running backs that have got that elusiveness and that burst, I think then it does become a little bit more important on where they land.
Yeah, absolutely. A stud is a stud wherever he plays, whereas I think a lot of these guys are, you know, in the right situation, they could be good fantasy performers, but I think they're not going to be a stud in 32 teams, basically.
Yeah.
Now, coming on to the last guy, so he's both of our RB7. Now, I think if we'd have wound back the clock 12 months, we'd have been talking about this guy as a, what, probably top five back last year.
Yeah,
had quite honestly one of the most ridiculous sophomore seasons I think I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, maybe the most horrific junior season to compare. So if you haven't guessed, it's Chuba Hubbard. So yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, he's in that tier three with Jefferson for me, as you mentioned, that sophomore season. It's hard to, we talk about the struggles he had in last season, but it's hard to forget a season like that with over 2,000 rushing yards. And he's just a freak athlete. He's got that electric speed. And for a guy that's 6 foot and 208 pounds, it is incredible. And he is just a constant, he's a home run threat constantly. And with that vision that he's got pretty good vision, I think, from what I've looked at. And the burst, if a hole does appear, again, like we spoke about with Etienne, he is gone and there's no catching somebody like Hubbard. But as you say, he's got a few knocks against him. Obviously, that 2020 season was a real disappointment. I think he struggled with injuries, I think, towards the back end of it. But yeah, his pass blocking as well is absolutely abysmal. That's something that's going to be a problem when it comes to him being on the field for third downs. But as we said, if he's on a system where he can be allowed to get in space, he's not really going to be asked to block. But yeah, as far as his pass blocking, it is literally non-existent.
Yeah, I think I just honestly I can't decide what to do with Chuba Hubbard, because you watch that, you know, that sophomore tape, and it's incredible. As you said, he is, you know, a former track star. He is a you know, decent size, and the size adjusted speed must be through the roof.
Absolutely,
but I just can't work out what's happened in the last year. I know he had some issues with the head coach, and mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't perhaps the most stable of kind of teams last year. But to just go from, as we said, over 2,000 rushing yards to only putting up 600 this year, it's just mind blowing. And I really worry that the NFL are going to hold that against him. You know, you mm-hmm. look at someone like, I appreciate the kind of the situation was slightly different with injuries and things, but you look at Arian Foster, who had that incredible, I can't remember if it was sophomore or junior year, the year before he came out, and then was being talked about as being an early round draft pick. And then he had a horrific final year, ended up going undrafted, got to the NFL, landed in a dream, you know, one cut system in Houston, obviously was a stud for sort of 5 or 6 years. I just don't know if I see that with Chuba Hubbard. I think that one incredible season for me is almost more of the outlier than the rest. And I think that I wouldn't be shocked if he falls into a day three later draft pick, which to me says everything around how the NFL is viewing him, despite that ridiculous sophomore season. And I just worry that you mentioned about his essentially his non-existent pass pro. I also worry about his receiving game usage. Yes, you know, he had 20 odd receptions in his freshman and sophomore year, but I don't think he's a great receiving back. I don't think he's great in space before the ball is there as such. I think he's great with the ball in his hands, but I don't think he's a great route runner. I don't think he's great at setting up defenders to create separation. I just don't really know what to do with him. As I said, it's some incredible highlights, showing some great flashes, but I just don't believe that he's going to be able to transition that to the next level.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with that one. I agree. I don't think he's up there in his pass catching, but as a back that he really needs to be in that space for him to really show what it can be. He's going to be relying on creating that own space when he's got the ball in his hands. And he's one of those guys that I think he's going to have splash plays again, but think on the whole is going to be a disappointment. I think he'll be a day three pick as well myself, but he could be one of those guys where we look back and we think how's he fell this far down, and if he lands in that right situation and he gets that chance and he makes those big plays, we're all going to look daft. But yeah, just looking at him from now, I think NFL teams are going to think the same. I think he is going to fall in the draft. And yeah, it's going to be interesting, but as I say, he's definitely got potential to be one of those guys that shocks us all and makes us all look silly.
Yeah, absolutely. So moving on to the quick fire round, or I guess I don't know if you listen to the quarterbacks, but it was slightly less than quick fire, shall we say? But so the first question is running back with the highest fantasy ceiling. So where are you going here?
Shall I do like your brother and just name one player for all these guys?
Yeah, you can't have Michael Carter for every option.
Well, I'll just cancel him out of this. I've got Travis Etienne for the guy that I think has the highest ceiling. Obviously, we keep going on about these landing spots after just saying it wasn't important. But if he does land somewhere, as you say, with that Shanahan style offense, then somebody like Etienne is going to be unreal, I think. Yeah, San Francisco, Cardinals, maybe even your Jets as well. I think it'd be a great fit in there, obviously, with Robert Saleh coming in with that Shanahan-style offense. Yeah, I think his ceiling's through the roof if he lands somewhere like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, not to harp on again, but I also think draft capital is key with that as well. I think if a team is willing to, you know, hopefully early day two draft capital and really spend a premium pick on him, I think it says that they're going to hand in the keys and really build an offense around him. Whereas, you know, if we're talking sort of back end of day two, maybe even into day three, I think that sort of potential ceiling certainly reduces quite significantly.
Yeah, I think it's between him and Harris, I think, for being the first running back drafted personally. So I'm a big believer that he is going to get that draft capital, but obviously we can't predict the future, so we don't know. But it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out when draft comes around.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about the running back with the highest floor?
Yeah, this one, it has to be Najee Harris for me, this one. I fully expect he's going to get that strong draft capital. So then you think he's going to get that solid workload and become a workhorse running back right out of the gate. As we mentioned earlier, he's got that rushing ability, but then also his receivings is perfectly fine. And somewhere like the Steelers is somewhere that I'd really love to see him land. The Falcons as well. I think both of those backfields is somewhere where he's just going to dominate touches and, yeah, he's just going to have a really solid floor, I think, in fantasy.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about the running back you'd bet your life on then?
Yeah, so this one I did have to go with Harris again, obviously, for all the things I just mentioned. He's just got so many strong traits that I just think it's hard to say that he's bulletproof, but I just think he's a bulletproof prospect for me, and I think he's going to be perfectly fine. And we mentioned it earlier with the 2020 class. I think he'll probably be right there as my RB3 behind Taylor and DeAndre Swift. So that's how confident I am in his ability. And yeah, I'll be willing to bet my life on him.
Fantastic. I'll remind you of that when I'm trying to trade with you later in the afternoon.
Yeah.
What about, so in terms of value, so where do you think the best player at the current cost?
Yeah, so I was going to say Michael Carter because he is the RB7 in ADP and obviously he's my RB4, so that feels like great value. But I thought I'd mention a player that we've not spoke about. It's Jarrett Patterson. He's out of Buffalo. He's a smaller running back. He's 5'9", 195 pounds, and obviously it's a small school, but he had a super high productive college career. 3,884 rushing yards and 52 touchdowns in 32 games. So unbelievable production. And his ADP is the RB12. I have as my RB8. So if we just want to mention somebody a little different, I think Patterson is going to be a great value, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyone that can score, was it eight touchdowns in a game? Hard not to love that sort of stats.
Absolutely.
Are you concerned about his, I guess, receiving usage at all?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't have any, I don't believe, did he, in 2020? But yeah. I think that was down to the system, if I'm being perfectly honest. I just don't think he was really used. I think he's definitely a capable pass catcher. So I do think he's not going to be somebody like, I know Kev Lehman for this, but like Ronald Jones, where you just think it's never going to really work out for him when it comes to catching the ball. But yeah, it's not a major worry, but when you're just looking at the stat line, it does stand out. And yeah, I can see why people would be concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about your favourite sleeper then, Matt?
Yeah, so for this one, I've gone for Demetric Felton, who played for UCLA. Again, he's another smallish back. He's 5'10", but he's only 200 pounds. But he's super explosive, and he's got unbelievable agility for a running back. He actually plays slot wide receiver as well, so he's super versatile. Talking about versatile players, he's extremely versatile. He's got great hands. He's likely going to be a late pick. I think he's probably going to go day three, but I just think the upside there is unbelievable. And with an ADP of RB13, again, he could be another great steal in fantasy.
Yeah, absolutely. I was intrigued to see you include him as a running back. I've actually got him ranked as a wide receiver.
Yeah.
But I think you know, that's basically down to what the NFL, you know, we had the same thing with Antonio Gibson last year, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, but just like Antonio Gibson, one of those players that, Lynn Bowden as well, somebody that you're not really too sure where, and it's going to depend how an NFL team views him and how they want to use him, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, as you said, he's completely electric with the ball in his hands. He's probably going to contribute more on special teams to begin with, but you know, if he can carve out any sort of role, I'll certainly be stashing him on a few rosters this year.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, so, I mean, I guess to sum up then, Matt, so we're not really feeling the depth. We're not really feeling the star power.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, what do you think about the class as a whole? Is it a case mm-hmm. of one stud and not much else? Is it a case of, you know, what do you think?
I think, If we're talking about studs, definite studs, obviously there's just one that stands out for me, and that's Najee Harris. But I think it's a class that's going to have players that can flash. I think players that are probably going to be stuck in committees, and they're going to be players that are going to be annoyed that they're not getting the chance to see the field. But I think as a whole, it's never going to match up to that 2020 class. That was obviously one of the best running back classes we're probably ever going to see with the level of talent that come out. But I definitely think there's going to be a few guys that surprise people. Michael Carter. but yeah, I think on the whole, it's not the best class we're going to see. I think personally, it's better than that 2019 class that we had. But it's just a lot more of like running backs that you won't want to bet your life on that they're going to contribute at the NFL level. So
yeah,
a lot of it's going to come down to, obviously we keep mentioning the draft capital. It's going to be interesting. Obviously we know that NFL teams now, they don't put as much value on the position. So if there's going to be a few guys that can go in the first round, early day two, then I think we can change his opinion and maybe think a little bit more of them. But as a whole, yeah, it's just Najee Harris that stands out for me.
Yeah, and I think that's it, is that if you're looking at this class expecting to get, you know, 2020 level production or multiple studs, you're probably going to be disappointed. But I think if you can come into it and know that of that second to third tier,
mm-hmm.
There's probably going to be one or two that you know, surprise us and really become fantasy relevant players, and you can get them in that sort of second to third round of startups, I think actually, you know, you're going to be pretty happy. But it's not going to be like last year where we had, what was it, five running backs off the board as mm-hmm. the kind of outside of quarterbacks, the five highest priced assets.
Yeah, I think just going to say from a fantasy perspective, I think if you need him running backs, and obviously we're talking from dynasty, those, if you've got first round picks, I think I'd just be trading those away to try and maybe grab, if you can get somebody out of that 2020 class, but then save your second round picks, even your third round picks, and just take a shot at some of these later guys. I mean, players like Michael Carter, I've seen him go late second in some mock drafts I've done. Basically everybody outside of Harrison and ETN really are dropping outside that first round. So just use that value that people see on those draft picks and try and grab yourself a stud with those first round picks, and then take a few shots in the second round.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I've talked about this before on previous pods, that second round pick, going and buying a load of running backs is one of my favourite things to do, because I think that if the NFL are spending second or third round draft capital on a guy, chances are at some point he's going to get a decent shot, and when that running back does hit, you know, it hits big, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The chances of a later receiver hitting is not as high as
mm-hmm.
when that sort of running back hits, certainly. Yeah. I would like to just give one little plug for my guy Colin Hill. I think that, you know, yes, he's not going to be a Najee Harris. He's not going to get into that top tier. But I do think that he's got incredible potential. And I think that he's got versatility, and he's got some fantastic work in the receiving game. And I do think that he could surprise a few people.
Yeah, he's definitely somebody that I consider having as my sleeper. I think I've got him around the RB10, I think, in my rankings. But as you mentioned, he's definitely got that upside. So another player that I'll be interested to see where he lands come draft time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you ever so much for coming on, Matt. It's been lovely to get you on to chat through some running backs.
No, I appreciate it, Rich.
So for the people that that don't know where to find you, where can we find you? Where can we read your work and listen to your voice?
Yeah, so you can catch me on Twitter at MattFFDynasty. A lot of my content comes through the FF Astronauts. At the moment, we've not got too much coming out, but obviously as we close into the NFL draft, a lot more content's going to be coming out. Yeah, on my Twitter, obviously you mentioned the threads. I've been doing some threads now. I've started switching more to dropping my rankings a little bit. So yeah, if you want to catch any of my work, just head over to Twitter at MattFFDynasty. And yeah, check me
fantastic
out.
And also obviously the podcast, the Fantasy World Cup podcast that you do with Kev, what days is that posted?
Yeah, that comes out every Tuesday. There's myself and Kev, who you can follow on Twitter at Dynasty_Goat. Yeah, a weekly podcast that drops every Tuesday. We're having regular guests on every other week. I believe we've got yourself coming on quite soon, Rich.
I believe so. I'm sure it's going to be, you know, the record-breaking pod in terms of listens, I'm sure, once you get me coming off.
Absolutely. But you can check us out at Fantasy Wildcard on Twitter.
Fantastic. Well, thank you ever so much, Matt. So next week we have got, so Mike, or as you'll probably know him, at Daddy's Home on Twitter from Fantasy Intervention. He's coming on to break down the rookie wide receivers. So keep listening, and we'll see you again next week.
HIV epidemic is not over. HIV is still here.
The face of HIV is so diverse.
The biggest thing to reduce HIV stigma is just to talk about it. Testing and PrEP and HIV treatment and how effective it is today.
Undetectable equals untransmittable. Whether you're positive or negative, there's not a wrong door. Whether it's testing or whether it's treatment, do it for you, Montgomery County.
Learn more about HIV testing, treatment, and prevention at doitforyoumc.org.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.